It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Without life, there can be no liberty. Without liberty, there is no happiness. Without equality, there is no opportunity. America has strived since its founding to promote equality under the law, to correct injustices, and to ensure opportunity for all. It is a work in progress, not always perfect. Some look at American opportunity and see only problems. They want equal outcome, not equal opportunities. They criticize without solutions, demand wealth without work. Their ways are historical failures evidenced by tyranny and poverty, a prevailing darkness in every country it has been tried. The American dream, inspired by American opportunity, is the engine of entrepreneurship.
Oh, it's beautiful, Mike.
The inspiration to the greatest inventions, the highest achievements, and establishing a quality of life second to none, providing jobs, creating futures, fulfilling dreams. In America, opportunity preserves individual freedom. It leads to exceptionalism. It's a bright, shining light, an example for all to see. Tonight, we explore together America, land of opportunity.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That's the way the Republican National Convention started last night. I have to tell you, you know, I have been a Republican since I started voting. My parents were Democrats, so I am a Republican, but I have never been a party operative. I was asked to run for Senate once in Illinois, and I didn't really want to do it, but I asked, you know, and prayed about it. I thought, Lord, if I've been asked, I should at least pray and ask for you to tell me. Because you know I'll do it. Even though I don't want to do it, I'll do it. And it was funny how God answered those prayers so profoundly. One of my dearest friends, Dr. Erwin Lutzer, I had lunch with him, and he said, Sandy. And he advised me. He said, no, that's not the right thing for you. And two people in public life whose names you would know, I had a call to talk to them. They both called me within 30 minutes of each other and said, no, you can't do that. That would be like a fish out of water. Don't do that. My point is, I'm not a party operative. I never have been. I've been as much of a critic of the Republican Party, not lately, but in the past. If you've listened to me, you know that that's true. I am not a fan of the Republican rhinos. I'm not a fan of the compromisers. In many ways, I find them more detestable than the outright leftists. And so that's where I stand. If you're wondering, if you haven't listened enough and you don't know. But I have to say that oddly enough, President Trump, who is the unlikely conservative, you know, unlikely given his past, his bad record in terms of his personal behavior as a rich billionaire playboy, his, you know, three marriages, all of that stuff, all the things that you know, because I hear it all the time, you do too. Who would have thought that God would use him to advance values, whether it be the life, whether at both ends of the spectrum, the right to life, the right to choose, use drugs that would be life-saving, the right to keep your baby, policies in health and human services that have restored the natural order of genders, religious freedom, all of that. Who would have thought that? Who would have thought that? And yet, as I watch the convention, again, I watch it in the morning, so I can't stay up that late at night. But as I watched it this morning, I just was thrilled. It's not about the so silly thing is that people think this is all about President Trump. It really isn't. It's about the values that are deeply planted in our DNA. Now, we have a lot of people in this country that can't say that. A lot of them are from other countries. They don't have that same, their hearts do not beat fast when they see the flag. Or, listen, a lot of new citizens, their heart beat faster, hearts beat faster. But those that have not embraced what America really means, its ideals, its constitutional principles, that want to deconstruct and destroy it right now, they don't get this. They think it's about a personality. But it's actually about the things that we share, our shared experiences of honesty and hard work, that there is a God, that we live for something besides ourselves, that honesty should drip down and permeate the entire society, all of our interactions, our government officials, our security agencies, all of it, you know, and that hard work, you know, reaps benefits. I mean, that's pretty much a scriptural principle. And that the notion and the idea and the very deep-held belief and just the knowledge, because you see that what you believe is actually true, that God's principles are right and just and that they work. Okay, so those are the things that we saw last night. We saw lots of people speaking. There were so many great guests. Billy Graham's granddaughter spoke, Sissy Graham Lynch. She spoke about religious freedom and how it's been challenged and how it was nearly lost under the, I don't know if she mentioned Obama, but she talked about the challenges right now and how we have to fight for our religious freedom and the importance of it. And then Abby Johnson, who was the former director of a Planned Parenthood clinic, gave her testimony publicly about what it means to save lives. And we learn, of course, how much of a pro-abortion person Joe Biden is. It's just amazing what he has embraced, even late-term abortion. And then we heard this really incredible story about a guy named John Ponder. And I think rather than me telling you the story, I want to play this clip for you. The president, it's a long clip. The president introduces him, and then you'll hear John's voice talking about his own story. Then you'll hear the FBI agent who actually arrested John Ponder speaking after that. Let's listen to this moment of last night's convention, clip two.
Honored to tell John Ponder's story of transformation in the Rose Garden on the National Day of Prayer. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome him back to the White House. John's life is a beautiful testament to the power of redemption. John grew up without his father. As he tells it, my mother was strong, but she wasn't able to keep us out of the gangs and off of the streets, and they were violent streets. At the age of 38, he was arrested for bank robbery. While John was in prison, he began reading the Bible and listening to Christian radio. One day he heard Reverend Billy Graham on the radio proclaim, "Jesus wants to be Lord of your life." On that day, John dedicated his life to Christ. He spent the rest of his time in prison studying the Bible. When he was released, he heard a knock at his door. It was the officer who put him in jail, FBI Special Agent Richard Beasley, who said, "I want you to know that I've been praying for you." Now, Richard and John are best friends, and we are grateful that Richard is here with us today. In the last 10 years since John was released, he has created one of the most successful reentry programs, Hope for Prisoners in Las Vegas. I was glad to speak there earlier this year. As John says, Hope for Prisoners is a movement that began as a dream in a tiny prison cell and is now making a difference in the lives of thousands, truly bringing hope that there is an opportunity and a community that is waiting and willing to offer them a second chance. John, we honor your devotion to showing returning citizens that they are not forgotten. We believe that each person is made by God for a purpose. I will continue to give all Americans, including former inmates, the best chance to build a new life and achieve their own American dream, and a great American dream it is. Now I'd like to ask John and Richard to say a few words.
I can't tell you how grateful I am to have the opportunity to speak here today. Not so long ago, my life was running from the police, fearing the police, and avoiding the police. Not because of anything that the police had done to me personally, but due to the animosity I had allowed to grow inside of me, making me believe that they were my enemy. But today, praise God, I am filled with hope, a proud American citizen who has been given a second chance. My transformation began in a prison cell where I found myself a three-time convicted felon facing yet another sentence. I gave my life to Jesus and made him a promise that I would spend the rest of my days helping others like me. My first help and support came from the unlikeliest of places, the FBI agent who arrested me, Richard Beasley. He is now a dear friend and has been a source of encouragement to me throughout my entire journey. I am grateful for the men and women of the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department who volunteer their time to people who are returning to our local community after incarceration. These are the real-life heroes who put their lives on the line every day, armed with the promise that they made to protect and to serve, have made a tremendous impact in the lives of men and women reintegrating back into our society. My hope for America is that formerly incarcerated people will be afforded the opportunity to take advantage of the fact that we live in a nation of second chances. My hope for America is that law enforcement and people in the communities across our country can come together and realize that as Americans, we have more in common than we have differences. My hope for our great nation is to continue on this path we are on of being the most prosperous country in the world.
I'm so proud of John with his life's turnaround and for all the lives that he's helped to change. It may be hard to believe that as a retired FBI agent, one of my best friends is a person I arrested for bank robbery. When I met John 15 years ago, he was angry, scared, frustrated, and anxious about his future. On the drive to prison, I stopped at a convenience store and bought John a coffee and a donut. After he was sentenced, John sent me a necktie and a note thanking me for treating him like a gentleman. 5 years later, when he got out of prison, John called me and wanted to meet for lunch. He was a different man. He talked about starting a reentry program for men and women coming out of prison. Over time, John earned the trust and respect of the law enforcement community, many of whom volunteer in John's Hope for Prisoners program. I'm grateful for President Trump's commitment to criminal justice reform. On February 20th of this year, he was the guest speaker at the Hope for Prisoners graduation. He stayed much longer than scheduled to hand out diplomas to the 29 men and women who graduated that day. What a sight. The most important man in a free world shaking hands and pledging his administration's support to ex-offenders. Their families were there, the community was there. What a great second chance. I also appreciate President Trump's support for law enforcement. I always felt like I had strong support as an FBI agent, but there's nothing worse than knowing you're being second-guessed when you're doing your job. In certain parts of our country right now, law enforcement doesn't feel like they have the support from their local leaders. They're being painted with a broad brush, unfairly, with calls for defunding. But as President Trump knows, the overwhelming percentage of law enforcement officers are good, smart people who are doing their jobs very well. And they can change the world working with people like John. Thank you.
So now right, I'd so like then to after invite that, John's
I'm
wife.
I'm going to cut this off because what happened was President Trump then brought John's wife in and he gave him a full pardon last night. There were a lot of tears. It was amazing. But here's the point I think I want to make. I started the segment with a little sidetrack talking about my own lack of ardor for a party or a president. I mean, my devotion is to the Lord Jesus Christ. And I have to say that last night Christ was preached. That was just part of it. That was just part of it. It wasn't the only time. And so if you wonder why, you know, I support Republicans and that convention and why it thrills me so much, that's the magic sauce right there. Because they're trying to restore the values because that's what Jesus does. He transforms your lives and you renew your mind and you conform to his ways and it brings tremendous blessing. It also brings prosperity, which is kind of ironic. I mean, a lot of people lead with that. I think it's just a kind of a byproduct. It's also the thing that then turns around and corrupts us. That's what's happened to America. But, okay, there's a lot more to say, and I have a guest coming up, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
When it comes to choice, the Ministry of Preborn offers the ultimate life-saving choice by providing a free ultrasound. When an abortion-minded woman sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to keep growing, and I'm going to be a great mom.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, and their mission is to help save babies' lives and souls through love and compassion and the message of Jesus Christ. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for David Hale, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs at the U.S. State Department. Mr. Hale oversees international policy issues around the globe. 1 Peter 4:10 reminds us of the importance of using your God-given gifts in your daily task. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for David Hale as he manages our country's international policy. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. There's a long-standing tradition during football season in Marysville, Ohio. The players pose for a promotional picture paid for by the Monarch Quarterback Club. This year, the Marysville Monarchs decided to honor law enforcement and first responders. So the guys got dressed up in their uniforms and had their pictures taken atop a train engine. The young men were waving flags, the American flag, the Ohio flag. They also posted flags representing first responders, including the thin blue line flag. Well, that turned out to be a problem for some local residents who posted complaints on social media, angry the team would show their support for police officers. The photographer was dumbfounded, telling the local ABC television station, "Some of the boys have family members who are first responders. We're going down a very bad path, America." Be sure to listen to my national radio show live noon to 3 Eastern, or you can download the free podcast at toddstarnes.com.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Good evening. My name is Jason Joyce, and I'm an 8th-generation lobster fisherman from Swan's Island, Maine. I make my living from lobster fishing, oyster farming, and providing ecotours in the beautiful waters near Acadia National Park, where I have over 200 years of family history. I have to confess, I didn't support Trump in 2016. Skeptical that he shared my conservative views, I expected him to flip-flop on his campaign promises. But he has followed through on his promises, including last week when he brokered a deal to end European Union tariffs of 8% on Maine live lobsters and up to 20% on Maine lobster products, which is great news for Maine's lobstermen and women. I live in an island with 370 residents, and lobstering is how we provide for our families. Maine's lobstermen are true environmentalists. We practice conservation every day. If we didn't, we'd be putting ourselves out of business. 4 years ago, the Obama-Biden administration used the Antiquities Act to order thousands of square miles of ocean off limits to commercial fishermen. They did it to cater to environmental activists. Although Maine's lobstermen don't fish there, Obama's executive order offended us greatly. It circumvented the Fisheries Council's input. President Trump reversed that decision, reinstating the rules that allow stakeholder input, and he supports a process that seeks and respects fishermen's views. As long as Trump is president, fishing families like mine will have a voice. But if Biden wins, he'll be controlled by the environmental extremists who want to circumvent long-standing rules and impose radical changes that hurt our coastal communities. I strongly support President Trump's re-election. When he sees something isn't right, he's fearless in fixing it. He listens to working people. He nominates judges who respect the Constitution and the right to life. He keeps his word, like eliminating the European tariffs and moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. I hope you will join me this time in voting for President Trump. Stand up for your country. Thank you.
Great moment last night at the convention. Jason Joyce, a Maine lobsterman. And you know, what struck me was a lot of us, my father was a businessman, and so I'm familiar with the kinds of businesses of a small town. And but I live in the middle, I lived in mid-America. Now, Jason's from Maine, and their life's work, their family business is fishing. We are such a big country, and people make their living in so many different ways. And yet it would be safe to say that across the country, small businesses, meaning not Amazon, meaning not Target, meaning not Walmart, all those big conglomerates, small business floods this country, provides most of the jobs, and it has been hit so hard. No one knows more about this than Jenny Beth Martin. She's the founder of Tea Party Patriots. She also, remember, she's the one who organized that press conference with all those doctors that was banned from Facebook and Twitter, such a big dust-up. And Jenny Beth has done so many fine things during her time at Tea Party Patriots. And I've asked her to join us this morning and just talk about the business side, because that's kind of what was featured last night at the convention. Jenny Beth, good morning, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jenny, is there a way to kind of quantify, I gave an overview, but what's happening to small businesses, you know, in terms of the economic hit right now?
I'm sure that there is, but I don't have a statistic off of the top of my head. What I can say that I can speak to, and part of the reason why I've been so concerned about getting businesses open from the moment that slow the spread began, is that I watched as my ex-husband's business had to stop after 9/11 for a week because transportation around the country stopped. And his regular operating expenses did not stop. So his rent was still due, the leases on cars were still due, insurance payments were still due, all of the things that he normally had to pay were still due. All the outgoing expenses were due, but the incoming expenses or the incoming income stopped, and he did not have that for a week. And it created, it set the stage to create problems later, just 1 week. And in January, I heard that China was shutting down for several weeks. And then ultimately, America shut down. And honestly, we're just not back up where we need to be. And we're going on 5 months now. You cannot expect businesses to be able to stay in business and continue to operate and to make a profit when they're in that kind of situation. I think it's why we've seen restaurants that are closing. I saw a place in Virginia. It was one of the most heartbreaking. We had to close our business notices that I've seen from a zip lining place in Virginia. That's outside. Why in the world can they not stay in business? Knowing what we know about the virus at this point and throughout the summer, it seems like they should have been able to open. But still, local governments and state governments have just choked many businesses across the country.
You know, I was just—I bet you saw this too, Jenny Beth. Let's see, Amazon's profits are up 100%. Target's are up 80%. I think Walmart was something comparable. So we have a case where these—and I'm not against big business. It just always irritated me when the left would say big business, like, you know, somehow being wealthy and having a big business is evil in itself. And I think having money or not having it is morally neutral. It's how you feel about money that corrupts you. But anyway, that little sermon there was for free. The thing of it is, we are seeing these major conglomerates get gluttonously wealthy, and we're seeing small businesses shutter and close and restaurants. What's going to be the net effect of that, Jenny Beth?
Well, I think that at the end of the day, if you don't have those small businesses in business, you wind up having less competition, which drives up prices. You also decrease quality. So you have less competition to sharpen. So businesses are no longer sharpening one another. And then prices wind up going up and the quality of the product sold winds up going down. So it is beneficial to the big businesses who have run the smaller businesses out of business or who have been able to continue to operate when smaller businesses were not, while not giving the best options to the consumer. Now, Sandy, there's one thing to be said. If your business stinks and you can't keep up with the competition and you're unable to compete and to provide a competitive quality product, then capitalism allows for failure. And it's really hard to go through, or your business model just doesn't work, then those things happen. But what is happening right now to companies around the country, it's not because they were not operating well. Up until February and March, most of them were making profits. Many had taken loans out to expand their businesses because the economy was doing so well, and they expected things to continue. So there's a huge difference in the natural course of a business, whether it is able to succeed or not, versus one where the government and central planners have interfered and picked some businesses to succeed, like big chains, grocery stores, Walmart, Target. They were allowed to stay open in many parts of the country, while landscaping stores, paint supply stores, toy stores had to close. So you could buy those things at the big box stores, but you couldn't buy it locally.
Yeah, it really is tragic. And so here we are facing the election, and we haven't even touched on COVID, which I know is a very big topic for you and for me. But, of course, that's behind this, the reason for all this, the purported reason for all this shutdown. But Joe Biden made a startling statement just last week that I know you know well, Jenny Beth. In an interview, he said that he would shut down the entire country. He didn't say he didn't declare that he would, but if he needs to, he will. He's expressed his willingness to do that. What are your thoughts about that?
That is very, very concerning to me, because what he's saying is that he would listen to scientists, and if they said we need to shut down the country, then he would shut down the country. What does that mean exactly? Who are those people? When I hear that, what I hear is that nameless, faceless bureaucrats can make decisions that affect the entire country, and those people are not held accountable in any way, and he's basically going to turn over the levers of power with government to them to make those kind of decisions. It's abdicating your responsibility and your duty. It's one thing if he says, I'm shutting it down because I think it's the best thing for America, given all of the different input, and I'm working with Congress and we're passing legislation to do it. It's another thing to say, well, I'm going to listen to a bunch of scientists and then just randomly shut down the entire country and lock everyone down. That's one thing President Trump did not do. He listened to scientists, so he did do that, and he said, here are guidelines, but he did not create a one-size-fits-all policy for the entire country. And we can go, oh, I don't like the way one part of the country, say Michigan, handled the lockdown versus how Georgia or Florida handled it, but at least it's much easier to hold your governor or your local county government accountable than it is the president of the United States. So he left the power at the local and the state level rather than amassing power for himself. Joe Biden is okay amassing that power to himself and then abdicating the responsibility to scientists.
Jay, I just wonder if, I know you've thought about this, I certainly have too, and have no answer, but if President Trump should win in November, do you have any hope that we'll actually open up? Will anything change? Will some button be pushed and he'll put pedal to the metal and use his influence to get governors and other, you know, local authorities to start opening, letting businesses open up?
Well, I think that after the election, we may be sending messages to local and state governments around the country, or we may not. Some of it's going to be very difficult to do because by the time that lockdowns were happening, primaries were over and the ability to go and register to run for office had already passed. So it'll be a little bit difficult to hold people accountable. I've heard many people around the entire country who think that much of what we are experiencing right now will end after the election. And I hope that is correct. Not that I want the pandemic to be used for the election, but at some point it has to end. And one thing that I hear over and over, and I don't have the answer to, is this. And I think it's a valid question that people are asking. Who gets to decide when we live again? Who has that power? And who? When? When do we get to? Who says and when? When do we get to? And honestly, I think at the end of the day, the answer is we have the power.
Yes.
And we get to do it when we choose. And
totally.
At some point, we just have to say, no more. You did not do this through due process. It's one thing for us to look after our neighbors and make sure we're protecting our hospitals for 15 days. It's another for you to say, go be a prisoner in your own home for 5 months. And
totally.
It's up to us. It's up to us.
Well, I agree with you. And that's mind-numbing to me how we have rolled over as though, you know, we have no rights at all. So willing to just hand them over. And I think that maybe this has been a time, optimistically, when I look at it, I think maybe we've had a chance to rediscover why our founders fought so hard for freedom. Because I think we've forgotten what it's like not to be free. And maybe this is a good thing, to have a taste of not being free. Jenny Beth, before we say goodbye, there's a brand new book about the Republican Party that features, it talks about you a lot, right? Can you tell us about that?
There is a brand new book, and I have not had a chance to read it yet,
okay.
But it's by a Wall Street Journal, a Wall Street Journal reporter. I interviewed with him several times in the last couple of years. He has this amazing book out about the conservative movement from, I think, Reagan or before Reagan through now. And I'm looking forward to reading it. I just have to be at my house long enough to actually pick up the mail.
You're at the convention, aren't you?
I'm going to be at the speech on Thursday. I was in Dallas for a reopening schools event the other day, and I'm just doing a lot of traveling right now.
All right, so now we have a couple of minutes left. I'm assuming you're watching at least parts of the convention. I'd love to know what you think so far.
I think the one thing I've heard people say over the years, especially during the Obama administration, is Republicans need to tell stories and to make their points through these stories and how their policies affect individual Americans. President Trump did that in the State of the Union. I think maybe a lot of people have forgotten how amazing the State of the Union speech was. It was the best I've ever seen in my entire life this year. And I think what we're seeing in the convention process right now is kind of a continuation of the storytelling. Here's the policy. Here's how it actually affected our life, whether it's a Cuban immigrant, the lobster fisherman who you or maybe they call themselves lobstermen, who you just played a few minutes ago, Herschel Walker, Vernon Jones. The list of people goes on and on and on. The businesswoman, I think, from Montana who owns a restaurant. Just these stories that you finish and you may not remember the name, but you remember what they were saying and the point that they were saying, and that these policies are making a difference in real people's lives, and that Donald Trump is not the person the media tries to make him appear.
Very well said. I totally concur. And the sincerity with which they're delivering their own individual stories in their own voice and their own words is pretty amazing. You can't make that stuff up. And so the passion is coming across. And I think that's why we're seeing a lot of Democrats speak up right now saying, listen, I'm changing my vote. I'm changing my vote. Jenny Beth Martin, Tea Party Patriots. Jenny Beth, thanks. It's great to talk to you. We'll see you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
We'll be right back. Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Religious liberty is under siege in our country today. We invite you to watch a video featuring Pastor Rob McCoy.
The Constitution doesn't give us rights. The Constitution is designed to limit what the government can do in infringing our inalienable rights.
Godspeak Calvary Chapel in California has been threatened with fines and jail time just for meeting. Please sign our petition proclaiming that you will serve Christ first, not Caesar. Find the video and sign the petition at afa.net.
Then Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head and clothed him with a coat of mail. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. 40 days of twice daily taunting from Goliath sent Saul and the Israelite army reeling in fear. But David's passion for Yahweh, conviction, and full persuasion stirred King Saul. When people are on fire for God, it often provokes others to glob on to that fire. But we must be careful to resist the well-meaning overtures of the flameless bystanders. Saul meant well, but his armor couldn't help. It would only slow David down.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at afr.net for more. From Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. President Trump has been mocked for saying that mail-in voting leads to voter fraud and chaos, but every day he has proved right. Detroit has a mail-in catastrophe on its hands. First, they cannot legally even start counting votes in 72% of precincts because the poll books and the number of votes cast don't match. Now comes eyewitness evidence that up to 20,000 votes were counted without being verified because workers were running so far behind. Trump's margin of victory in 2016 in Michigan was just 10,704 votes, meaning in a close election, this kind of chaos and likely fraud could put someone in office whom the people did not choose. Time to go back to in-person voting with voter ID to keep a Travis mockery like this from ever happening again.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The State Department just urged Americans to divest Chinese Communist Party companies' stocks at risk of delisting from our capital markets. How is the CCP responding? Incredibly, it's bringing more of its companies here, confident Wall Street allies will help ensnare more U.S. investors and underwrite more of its malevolence. A poster child for such a gambit is XPeng Motors. It's expected to raise $1 billion-plus in an oversubscribed initial public offering in New York tomorrow. Known as China's Tesla, XPeng manufactures electric cars. That's a particularly apt comparison because XPeng has been accused of stealing Tesla's patented intellectual property. Ditto, Apple's closely held autonomous vehicle technology. Before we reward an alleged serial thief of American IP with the money of mostly unwitting U.S. investors, this IPO should be paused and subjected to close national security and national interest scrutiny. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This morning, get up, come down here, and what I see, I was not prepared for. I knew it was going to be a disaster, but I didn't know what a disaster looked like until I saw it.
And you, I can hear the emotion in what you're saying. I mean, what is the family feeling right now?
It's tough. This is a business that my parents started 40 years ago, small, out of their garage. It was a small business. Did it just to make a few extra dollars, and eventually it grew. 31 years ago, they bought this building, and so we've been here ever since. They're very upset about it. It's emotionally hurtful. We didn't do anything to anybody. You know, why do we deserve it?
Yeah, so that's a business owner in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Last night, three people were shot, two were killed, and businesses continue to be destroyed. A man trying to preserve a charity, I don't know what his affiliation with it is, but he was trying to, the looters were burning it down and taking things. He tried to stop them with a fire hose, and they beat him, and that was a horror. I mean, there are so many things to tell you about what happened last night. I haven't got time to tell you all those things. Of course, that happened as a result of Jacob Blake, the young black man who was shot by the police as he was getting in the car. We don't know what the circumstances are yet, whether he was armed. Some people say he was. We really don't know. But as a result of him being shot by the police, Kenosha is burning, and the businesses are being shut down. And I thought it was really interesting that Jacob's mother was being interviewed yesterday, she was such a lady, and I want you to hear at least in part what she had to say. Let's listen.
My family and I are very hurt, and quite frankly, disgusted. And as his mother, please don't burn up property and cause havoc and tear your own homes down in my son's name. You shouldn't do it. People shouldn't do it anyway. But to use my child or any other mother or father's child, our tragedy, to react in that manner is just not acceptable. Mm. And it's not helping Jacob. It's not helping Jacob or any other of the men or women who has suffered in these areas.
That was Jacob Blake's mother. Jacob, by the way, reportedly is paralyzed and injured in the spine, and we're waiting for reports on that. And again, we need to know what happened. She didn't make any excuses for him. She didn't talk about it, but she's just a grieving mom, you know, worried about her son. And then she went on to address President Trump very respectfully. I just, if I had time, I would play that for you. But it was I was impressed with her nobility. Her character just spilled out. I found myself wondering if she was a Christian. Yes, I did. So that's what's happening. The Kenosha's like burning, and they're destroying businesses. And Jacob is reportedly paralyzed. We'll see. His attorney's saying that. His attorney's not exactly trustworthy, so that's why we're not sure. But I don't know. It's a sad situation, no matter how you look at it. Business is being destroyed. Meanwhile, last night at the convention, of course, there were a lot of things to give us hope, and that's why I'm concentrating on that this morning. One of the things, speaking of sons and their parents, this is Eric Trump. Of all the clips I have to play, I want you to hear Eric Trump speaking last night, because I thought that Eric was so articulate, and especially the way he ended. So let's just relax and listen for a second to Eric Trump at the convention last night, clip 8.
Good evening, America. When I stood on this convention stage 4 years ago, no one fully understood the historic change that was about to take place. We could all feel it. Something was happening. A movement was forming just below the surface. The forgotten man and woman, voiceless in Washington, D.C., were preparing to rise up. Our movement followed the pattern of so many that came before us. First, we were ignored. Then we were laughed at. Then they fought us, and then, together, we won. From that moment forward, America came first. America started winning again. America became respected again. But with every movement, there's a counter-movement. In the view of the radical Democrats, America is the source of the world's problems. As a result, they believe the only path forward is to erase history and forget the past. They want to destroy the monuments of our forefathers. They want to disrespect our flag, burn the stars and stripes that represent patriotism and the American dream. They want to disrespect our national anthem by taking a knee while our armed forces lay down their lives every day to protect our freedom. They do not want the Pledge of Allegiance in our schools. Many of them don't want one nation under God. The Democrats want to defund and disrespect our law enforcement. The Democrats want an America where your thoughts and opinions are censored when they do not align with their own. President Reagan said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. It must be fought for, and it must be protected. This is the fight that we are in right now, and it is a fight that only my father can win. My father ran not because he needed the job, but because he knew hardworking people across this great country were being left behind. The media mocked these patriots in the flyover states in which they lived. They ignored the Trump flags. They ignored the millions of MAGA banners and barns painted in red, white, and blue. The silent majority had no one fighting for them in either party. Their so-called leaders were bowing to China, bribing Iran, and spending more time worrying about how they'd be received by the elites in Paris than how Americans would provide for their families in Pittsburgh. Our family lost friends, but it only pushed us to fight harder. My father pledged to every American in every city, state, and town that he was going to make America great again. And so began the great American comeback. Almost immediately, taxes were slashed, regulations were cut, and the economy soared to new heights, heights never seen before. Wages went through the roof. Unemployment reached the historic lows, especially for Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, and women. Trade deals were ripped up and renegotiated. Lights were turned back on in abandoned factories across our country. Trillions of dollars were repatriated back to the United States, which had been sitting in foreign lands for far too long. Once again, America became the envy of the world. And with that renewed strength came leverage. The president demanded that our allies pay their fair share for the defense of the Western world. My father rebuilt the mighty American military, adding new jets, aircraft carriers. He increased wages for our incredible men and women in uniform. He expanded our military defense budget to $721 billion per year. America was no longer weak in the eye of the enemy. The moment President Trump ordered special forces to kill some of the deadliest terrorists on the planet, the day the mighty Moab was dropped on insurgent camps, is the day America took a stance to never be defeated by the enemy. Al-Baghdadi, Soleimani, dead. Over and over, issue after issue, the economy, the wall, the military, trade deals, tax cuts, Supreme Court justices, VA hospitals, prescription drugs, school choice, right to try, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, peace in the Middle East. Never-ending wars were finally ended. Promises made, and promises for the first time were kept.
That was Eric Trump. That is Eric Trump, the president's son, his third child. And then he goes on to get a little personal, and I want you to hear it. Let's listen.
Most politicians spend their entire careers in Washington, D.C. and get absolutely nothing accomplished. For example, Joe Biden. Joe Biden is a politician who has been in government for 47 years. He's a career politician who's never signed the front of a check and does not know the slightest thing about the American worker or the American business, the engine which fuels the greatest economy the world has ever known. The same politician who has been a total pushover for communist China and someone who would be a giant relief for terrorists who now have spent years running, hiding, and being taken out by the most talented military known to man. Joe Biden has pledged to raise your taxes by $4 trillion. 82% of Americans will see their taxes go up significantly. Biden has pledged to stop border wall construction and give amnesty and health care to all illegal immigrants. Biden has pledged to defund the police and take away your cherished Second Amendment. My father, on the other hand, delivered the largest tax cuts in American history, knows if you do not have a border, you do not have a country, and will always support law enforcement and your right to keep and bear arms. Every day, my father fights for the American people, the forgotten man and woman of this country, the ones who embody the American spirit, which is unlike anything else in the world. It built the New York City skyline. It built the Hoover Dam. And soon, under my father's leadership, it will send Americans to Mars. The American spirit can be felt in the majesty of the Grand Canyon, the shadows of Mount Rushmore, and the stillness of the air at Gettysburg. It can be seen in the wide-eyed wonder of every American child as they take their first breath in the greatest country the world has ever known. It defeated fascism, it defeated communism, and in 68 days, it will defeat the empty oppressive, and radical views of the extreme left. Ronald Reagan's quote ends with this simple warning. One day we could spend our sunset years telling our children what it was once like in the United States where men and women were free. Under President Trump, freedom will never be a thing of the past. That's what a vote for Donald Trump represents. It's a vote for the American spirit, the American dream, and for the American flag. To the law enforcement officer who's being attacked, betrayed, and whose job they are trying to make extinct, my father will fight for you. To all houses of worship and to all people of faith stripped of our religious freedoms and religious liberties, my father will fight for you. To the voiceless, shamed, censored, and canceled, my father will fight for you. To our farmers who work dawn to dusk to keep our plates full, my father will fight for you. To every single mother and father, to our veterans, our coal miners, and to the American worker, my father will fight for you. And to every proud American who bleeds red, white, and blue, my father will continue to fight for you. In closing, I'd like to speak directly to my father. I miss working alongside you every single day, but I'm proud to be on the front lines of this fight. I'm proud of what you are doing for this country. I'm proud to show my children what their grandfather is fighting for. I'm proud to watch you give them never stop. Continue to be unapologetic. Keep fighting for what is right. You are making America strong again. You are making America safe again. You are making America proud again. And yes, together with a forgotten man and woman who are finally forgotten no more, you are making America great again. Dad, let's make Uncle Robert very proud this week. Let's go get another 4 years. I love you very much. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Wow. Eric Trump, even the second time, it just don't you wish that someday your son or daughter would grow up to feel that way about you, to be that proud, that you would live in such a way that you would inspire your children? Because too often in our country now, we're seeing our kids just turn their back on the things we thought we'd taught them. We thought we had exampled them. Maybe we weren't as effective as we thought we were. And somehow, this president has managed to produce some kids that just really are smart and articulate. Somehow, they've been nurtured in the right way. Maybe their mother had something to do with that, too. I'm sure she did. But anyway, he's a tribute to his father. I think the kids are certainly a tribute to their father. Well, tonight for the convention, if you want to tune in, and I hope you will, because there's no way. I had so many things picked out to play for you, but there's just not enough time. I do feel that if I don't, the reason I play these long clips is because I feel like so much you hear just as, you know, a little bit of that and a snatch of that, and I want you to hear for yourself. You know, a person can be made to sound a certain way by just lifting out sound bites, and I want you to hear who they really are. And judge for yourself. Are they sincere? Are they speaking the truth? What is true here? Isn't that what we have to figure out? What's true? What's true and what is not true? Is what the Democrats were saying the week before true about this country and the systematic racism, the bad treatment of women? All of the things that they accuse certainly the center of America of, is that true? Which is the reality? That's the part you're going to have to decide, and then you're going to have to act on it, or you will lose your freedoms. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.